It is my pleasure to introduce our main speaker, Jose A. from Fresno, California. Welcome, Jose.
Ganhe Fat Choi. Some bullshit about the New Year, Chinese New Year, okay? I think it means congratulations and be prosperous, okay? Why I did that, I have no idea. I'm Jose and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the village group, not associated with the village people. We're gay sometimes we're not, okay? And it's located in Fresno, and I also like to recognize some of my friends that came from Fresno with me. The deal was sort of like similar to a time sharing. They could come to Vegas with me, but they have to come in and hear me speak, okay? So here they are, and they grunting about being here, but hey, screw them. There's only so much you can do. I really like to thank the group for asking me here. It's always an honor to be asked to talk, and I'm a little confused about Las Vegas. It's living in two worlds. We've been in the Strip since we got here, and now we're here, and I don't know how people do it, okay? I mean, you know, I know that if I live in Vegas, I probably would it follow the easier, softer way and go out and do that. Before I get started, I'd like to thank Chuck. You know, he's got a lot of spunk, and he's my kind of guy. You know, you're just a royal asshole like me, okay? And, I also like to welcome the newcomers. I'd like to congratulate the people that celebrated birthdays. And I would like to tell this to the people who did not have the courage or the know-how to identify themselves as newcomer. I don't know who you are. I probably will never meet you. But I hope that I can say something that can help you. And if you didn't have the courage nor the gum to identify yourself as a newcomer, welcome. Our program says that I should share my experience, my strength, and my hope. My experience is I will be 61 years old Saturday. Okay. My strength is I haven't had a drink since October the 3rd of 1978. And my hope is that I make it one more time. Okay. It's kind of an interesting thing. You know, I've been sober for some time, and walking through the Strip in Las Vegas, God damn it, I miss it, okay? There's just something magical about booze, okay? You know, and I'm a little nervous, so I'm trying not to lie to you people, you know, because that's my natural tendency, okay? I'm trying to get all my bearings together so I can be honest and thorough from the start. So give me a few minutes, and then I can tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I really admire you people for living in this town. You know, there's so much opportunity, okay? I learned in Alcoholic Anonymous that I have a disease that centers in my mind that tells me I'm not tall enough, I'm not handsome enough, I'm not rich enough, my house is not big enough, my wife is not pretty enough, and I can never be enough. Coupled with that, I have a hole in my soul, okay? And the only thing that used to fill that was booze and some of the other stuff that I used to take. And it worked for a long time, but I didn't know this. You know, and I spent a lot of times, and I did a lot of stupid things trying to fill that big hole that got created inside my soul. And drinking eased the pain and began to feel those little twinklings that I had in myself, okay? And to this day, I have not found anything that can fill that hole the same way that drinking and some of the other things did. Alcoholic Anonymous, the people in AA, sponsorship, a loving God, women, money, and all those things seem to come close to filling that hole that I have, but there's never been anything in my life that has been able to fill that hole like you did, okay? I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in Mexico. My parents were kind of funny people, okay? My mother came from a family that was very comfortable in Mexico, and they moved to a border town. Two of my brothers were born in the United States, and two of us were born in Mexico. My parents never drank. I have never been abused physically, mentally, emotionally, or sexually. And the reason that I mention that is because not everybody is as fortunate as that is, okay? And it is important for me to mention that I really did not have a reason to become alcoholic. But ever since I was a little kid, I was just weird, you know. I had funny feelings. I was too sensitive. I would get emotionally attached to things. And I learned that in Alcoholic Anonymous, you know, I'm already in love with this bottle of water, okay? You know? I don't know what there is about me. I just get emotionally attached to my coffee cup, okay? You know, and then people in AA tell, well, don't get involved in your first year, right? And they did, okay, but goddammit, don't do what I did, you know. Anyway, I have three brothers, and they all drink. My parents never drank. I grew up in an environment where the main thing in life was to go to school and get a job, get married, have a family, support your family, and try to, raise your family in a good environment, and that's what I wanted to do, okay? And I got married, and I had kids, and I had no idea that I had this thing called alcoholism. You know, I wasn't even aware that I had a drinking problem. With my family, you're just not alcoholic. They can't relate to that. They cannot, conceive the idea that you can't just drink like a man, okay? And so as we went along, I went to school and I got married and then I moved to California and the drinking continued. And like most people in Alcoholic Anonymous, you know, I began to think that I wasn't enough. And I began to think that whatever I had wasn't good enough for me. And so I strayed off and I was unfaithful and I was trying to build a career. And I had three little boys and my wife was always leaving me and I would become a single parent, and I would try to put those little three boys ready to go to school and then go to work, and I would come home and I would get them ready to go to school, and then I would start drinking, and by the end of the night I would fill the bottle with water so that when those little boys would wake up in the morning, they didn't think that I had drank too much. And it's kind of funny because years later, one of my sons told me, Daddy, why did you fill the bottle with water? Were you trying to clean the bottle or something? And, you know, we really don't have time for me to tell you about all the things that happened to me, because we all know that we can't drink, okay? That's why we're here, okay? So I don't want to bore you with my bouts that I had with alcoholism and my drinking in the jails and all those scenes. But one in particular that comes to mind is that I had gone to happy hour and I had three little boys at home, and I just planned to go there for one drink at happy hour. And I got home at midnight and I couldn't find those three little boys, and I just went insane and I found them under the bed with the canopy, and I felt so guilty, so remorseful, and there wasn't anything I could do. My drinking continued to get worse, and my wife came back, and it got to be so bad that I just kept my shit in my car, because one week I was in the house, the next week I was out of the house. So why go through trouble, okay? Just keep your shit in your car, that way you don't have to move it out or in, okay? I had an executive job at that time, and I was trying so hard to keep it together. And the drinking continued to get worse and worse and worse. You know how we alcoholics are. You know, we learn how to spend money, but we never learn how to save money. You know. And I had these enormous problems, okay? I just couldn't think straight. And I was going and going and going, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And we have to remember that those people that have been around Alcoholic Anonymous for some time, back in those years, we were not as well educated about the disease of alcoholism as we are today. You know, you get somebody with 28 days of sobriety, and they know more about the disease than we do, okay? They can't stay sober, but they know more shit about it, okay? You know? And in those days, it wasn't an open to be an alcoholic, okay? It wasn't so cheap to say, I'm an Alcoholic Anonymous, give me a break, okay? I mean, it was really anonymous, and there were only far in between people that would talk about Alcoholic Anonymous. And so I had no idea what Alcoholic Anonymous was, okay? And so what happened to me after all this trauma that I had and going to, I came to the end of my rope. And I don't know what it is for anybody, but I know that all of us have a point that we can't go any lower than that. For some of us, it's going to be death, okay? For some of us, you get to the point that you lose everything. I don't know what it is for you, but I can tell you that on October the 2nd of 1978, I was at the end of my rope. And I was sitting at a restaurant, just like at Danny's, called Dan's, okay? And it was the first time in my life that I couldn't get sober and I couldn't get drunk. And there was some people that came in from a meeting just like you. And you know how we are, okay? We go to any restaurant and we think we own the goddamn place, okay? You know, we spend $2 and leave 20 cents tip, okay? Nothing personal, okay? Because that's how I am. You know, and everybody was so happy, and everybody was trying to be somebody, and everybody talking millions and spending change and all that. And I was so impressed with the people in there that I turned around and I asked him, hey, do you mind if I sit down with you? And one of the guys said, are you sure that you want to sit with us? We're alcoholic. And I said, I don't care. And so they set me at the coffee table. And then a couple of guys, you know, from the goon squad went into the car and they got a big book and a bunch of literature and they took me into the back of the restaurant, okay, and you know how they, I mean, I didn't know what the hell they said, okay? So this guy asked me, do you think you can stay sober tonight? I said, I don't know. He says, well, why don't you take this big book and try to read it? He said, do you have any booze at home? I said, of course I had booze at home. What stupid question. Of course I do. He said, well, I want you to do me a favor. You know, I want you to go home and take that booze and then drop it down the drain. He said, but do me a favor, okay? Put the telephone by the neck of the bottle so I can hear that thing going down, okay? And so I went home and I did that, and I'm pouring out a bottle of Jack Daniels, and there's tears coming down my ears. And I'm thinking, I hope that son of a bitch knows what he's doing. Otherwise, we just wasted, you know, a good fifth of Jack Daniels. And I can remember reading the big book that night, because by this time, I can't sleep. You know, by this time, I have to stay awake all night. And so the next day, the guy calls me. He says, did you drink? I said, no. He says, do you think you can stay sober till noon? I said, I don't know. So I went to my office and I told my secretary, I'm not here, okay? So he called me again and he says, have you drank? I said, no. He said, well, do you think you can make it till 7 o'clock? I said, I don't know. So he says, I'm gonna pick you up and take you to a meeting tonight. So, you know, like most sponsors, you know, he was late, you know. So I paced that room, you know. By this time, I have the bachelor pad, you know, a couple of food crates, the obligatory Playboy magazine, you know, beer in there, no food, you know, maybe some tomato soup with some mold in there. When things get bad, you just move the mold to the side, okay? I was thinking, you know, the worst meal I've had is a cold Brussels sprouts burrito, okay? It wasn't that bad, okay? So the guy gets there, and he takes me to my first meeting just like this, and, you know, had the obligatory welcoming committee, and, you know, I, you know, welcome you, the most important thing in the room, and, you know, we like for you to stay sober, and we do all those things, and I thought it was an Amway meeting, okay? You know, I'm thinking, shit, maybe I'll get a toaster or something, okay? And so after the meeting, he took me to a coffee shop, and he said, you know, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. And I said, you don't understand. I haven't wanted to drink for a long time. And so that was my first day of sobriety, you know. It's kind of an interesting thing. They tell you in Alcoholic Anonymous that you should remember your first drink and your last drink, and I do. Now, I don't remember my first taco, okay, but I remember my first and last drink, okay. And so what happened, they took me to meetings and, you know, people that were new, they carry me. By this time, you know, I'm like a newcomer. You know, I'm spaced out. You know, I got beginning of cirrhosis of the liver, and they would take me to meetings and they would keep telling me that I was the most important thing in the room. I couldn't fucking believe it, okay? To this day, I have to be honest. I never did, okay? But it made him happy, okay? And I thought, well, what the hell, okay? If they think I'm the most important thing in this place, you know, their standards are pretty low, okay? So anyway, I began to work with this guy, and I didn't know about a sponsor. I had no idea what Alcoholic Anonymous was. And on Saturday, 4 days after... they picked me up at the coffee shop. They took me to a meeting. So this guy who's been my sponsor, and still my sponsor, you know, we went into this apartment complex and we knocked on the door and this beautiful girl walked in and said, oh, come in, guys, you know, have a drink. You know, she's in the shower. She'll come out of it. And I thought, God, this AA is not too bad, okay? And so this gorgeous girl's come out, and I mean, came out of the shower in a towel, and she looks at us, and excuse my language, says, who the fuck are you? I thought, wrong place, okay. So then we went next door and picked up this depressed guy that wanted to go to a meeting. Okay. The guy had a French beret. He was bald-headed. You know, he was a huge guy listening to some opera. And I go, oh, my God, what the hell are we doing here? And so for the first year of my sobriety, people in Alcoholic Anonymous kept me amused, you know. And I believe to this day that the purpose of a sponsorship is to amuse the newcomer until the steps kick in, okay? So if you sponsor a lot of people, don't flatter yourself, okay? You know, and what they did, they kept me amused and they kept me going and they kept me so busy that I didn't know what to do, you know. And by this time, my marriage is falling apart and it's over. And I go to AA meetings, I'm a newcomer, and I'm telling all the girls how lonely I am, you know. I was a young guy and... you know, I'm so lonely, okay, you know. But not just lonely, you know, I feel lonely to my bones, okay. So my ex-wife, in her wisdom, sent me the three boys to live with me, and I wasn't lonely anymore, okay. And so I became not only a newcomer, but I was a single parent with three little boys and a job and all those things. And it was pretty hard to keep up the thing. And the people in Alcoholic Anonymous are so cool and so caring that the women would come to my house with some bullshit excuse to see how I was doing. But in reality, what they were doing, they were checking to make sure that I wasn't abusing those three little boys, okay? And I didn't know that at the beginning. I just thought I was so popular, you know. I grew up with this belief, I'm the most important thing in the group, okay? And, you know, I would eternally be grateful to them. You know, keep in mind that in that time during my life, I have no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous is. You know, I really get impressed with people. They get in the book and they have great insights and they can tell you what's wrong. They make amends. They make restitution. You know, they're just the walking encyclopedia, okay? I couldn't wipe my ass with the big book, okay, for about 3 years, okay? In the first 4.5 years of my sobriety, were the worst years of my life. I couldn't touch anything that didn't turn sour, okay? They repossessed my car. They fired me from my profession that I had at the time. I had 3 little boys, okay? You're not exactly a vision for anybody if you want to date anybody when you're new, okay? You know, and so I had some real severe problems, and the only answer that would come in was to work the steps. Someplace in our book it says that, you know, if you are new, there's a pretty simple choice, he says, you know, to live a spiritual life or to die of an alcoholic death. I kind of like to do a survey, you know. I wish all of us would go to the casinos and take a clipboard and everybody walk in, hey, would you like to die of an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis, okay? You know, most people would say, hey, no brainer, dude. You get a guy like me, the first thing I would say is, could you repeat the question again? And then once you understand, is, can I get back to you tomorrow on this shit? Because I got to go home and think about this shit, okay? So anyway, I guess I should talk about the steps. My elders in Alcoholics Anonymous have always told me, you know, that I am going to get back out of AA as much as I put into it. And that if I admit to my innermost self that I have lost the ability to control and enjoy my drinking, you know, that is the first step of recovery. And so I ask, what the hell does that mean? You know, because people in AA give you all these sayings, so it's like a double lingo, okay? Sort of like algebra, okay? You know. Well, what the hell does that mean? You know, explain it to me in things, in ways that I can understand it. You know, and people usually with less education than all the brains we have here say, well, kid, you know, it means that even if you want to drink and you have the capability to drink, you just can't handle it anymore. That means that you cannot predict your behavior. And that made sense, okay? And then they talk about a power greater than myself. And I didn't have a problem with that, you know, because another elder in Alcoholics Anonymous explained to me that one day I had the craving and the terrible obsession to drink, and the next day I didn't. He said that one day I was a drunk and the next day I wasn't. And even though I was the most important thing in the group, I mean, shit, you know, it had to be somebody greater than me, okay? See, and I can understand that analogy because, I mean, I couldn't argue with that. One day I had this great obsession and I was a drunk, and the next day I didn't. And then we went into the third step. And I always say, well, you know, how do you do that? And they will give you different analogies. You know, it's sort of like dancing. You either lead or follow, but goddamn it, you can do both, okay? It took a little while. Yesterday, last night I had food poisoning, you know, so I was hoping I didn't have to take the third step today, you know, because if an attack came in, I didn't have a chance but make a decision to run to the bathroom, okay? And that's pretty much what happens in my life, okay? When I say screw it, usually somebody else takes care of it. I went to a lot of Catholic schools, and I was raised with good morals and with good values. I had a lot of training and a lot of examples how to be a good person. Never had the ability to grasp that. Like Clancy says, I had no training in being a fuck up, and I have a natural flair for that, okay? I like to lie, you know? In town, we have two major drugstores, and sometimes my wife calls me, where are you? And if I'm at Walgreens, I'm telling her I'm at the other one, okay? And if I'm at the other one, I'll tell her at the other one. And I ask myself, why do you do that? Oh, shit, keeps me in practice lying, okay? You know, you never know when you're going to need it, right? And then I had to do my fourth step, and I wrote it down in a paper sack, and I carried it with me all along because I thought, you know, that I was this Don Juan, okay? And didn't work out that way, okay? At the end of my fifth step, my sponsor said, you know what, you're a candy ass. Get out of here, okay? Then the sixth step and the seventh step was a little bit tougher to do than those. Because I had no idea what character defects was or what defects of character. It's taken years to realize that the purpose of the fourth and fifth step is to discover what makes me tick, what those insecurities, what the causes and conditions in my life has caused me, you know, to behave that way. I've already told you that I have this big cold in here, okay? And I try to cover that with a lot of things. But there were a lot of causes and conditions, sometimes I created, sometimes they just happened, that affected me and made me behave in a certain way, okay? And it took a long time for first to recognize them and identify them and then try to work on them, okay? And so I kind of skipped those steps because, you know, I like to do fun steps, like the first step and the 12th step, okay? I like to do two steps, okay? You know, I like to talk about God, and I talk about the 11th step because you don't have to do shit, okay? You just think about him, okay? And then the amends came in, you know, and I always argue with my sponsor, you know, it's not the money, buddy. It's the principle of the thing. He says, you know, it's always the money, okay? You have no principle. Just pay the money, okay? If you're really sincere about making amends, you know, a loan is a loan and a gift is a gift, okay? If somebody loaned you something, pay it back, okay? You know, well, you know, it was sort of a loan. Have you noticed how alcoholics can't answer a straight question? You ask them, hey, are you married? Well, it depends, okay? What do you mean by that? Do you work? Well, let's define that, okay? Do you have a driver's license? Well, yes and no, okay? Do you really want to get sober? Well, it depends what day of the week is, okay? You know. I've always had trouble making decisions, okay? The best amend I made was to my ex-wife, you know, because I hated her. You know, she sent me those three little boys to raise them, and I hated her because she ruined my action. You know, I was 32 years old, a handsome guy, and I wanted to just have a life of debauchery in AA. It didn't happen, okay? You know. I remember my sponsor one time asking me, hey, when are you going to make amends to the woman? I said, shit, she's not even on the list, okay? What are you talking about? It's been like 3 minutes or... No? Okay. I'm new at this, okay? I like to tell you some of my disappointments in life. You know, I wanted to be a mathematician, okay? And I was pretty good at it, especially if you smoke dope, calculus and derivatives, not a problem, okay? And one of my dreams was to go work for NASA and help them put people on the moon, right? But I suffer from this thing called, I think it's called dyslexia, where you transpose numbers and words. And so the professor said, you know, kid, you're real smart, but you got a little problem, you know, with your problem, we may end up in Tijuana rather than the moon, okay, so. So that was the end to that career, okay. The other disappointment I had was that, you know, I always, always wanted to feel like I was enough. Especially in relationships, okay? Because, you know, I always compromised myself and my self-esteem and my principles with the opposite sex because I never felt like I was enough. All the way from a simple thing, what would you like to eat? I don't know, what do you like to eat? Okay. Well, no, let's have this. No, let's have this. No, you do that, okay? Because I could never decide, you know, what the hell to do because I always wanted to do the right thing. And so by feeling less than and by feeling like I'm not enough, I always compromise myself. And it seemed that the more I compromised myself, the worse I felt. And so I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous to follow my elder's instructions, you know, that in order to be enough, I have to do things that make me feel like enough. If I have low self-esteem, the only way to raise your self-esteem is by do self-esteemable things, okay? Once again, you know, so what the hell does that mean? You know, and I hate that about sponsors. They give you all this bullshit, but they never tell you the quick solution, okay? And then you come back the next week and you threaten them and you want to discuss this. Ah, don't worry about it. It doesn't apply to you. The hell do you mean it doesn't apply to me, okay? And so he would do these things to me, okay? And I would go out and I would try to think and I would explore. And finally, I would come in and try to have a discussion with him. And he says, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is founded on a set of principles that are tailor-made for everybody that comes to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I cannot explain to you what that set of principles are because I don't know how you feel inside. And so you want to have to explain to me and show me what are the things that make you feel that way so that perhaps I can give you a suggestion as to what to do. She says, for instance, you know, I only feel guilty when I am, okay? You know, I said, what the hell do you mean by that? He said, well, you know, you come whining that you feel guilty is because you are, okay? If you quit doing shit that makes you feel guilty, I bet you won't feel guilty, okay? Well, I don't want to hear that shit, okay? You know, that's too complicated for guys like me, okay? The other thing that he pounded into me was the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous had to be the most important thing in my life. It would have to come before any relationship, before my kids, before my job, before anything. And I had a little trouble with that, okay? Because, you know, I'm only agreeable if it doesn't inconvenience me, okay? Besides having low self-esteem and not feeling like I'm enough, I don't like to be inconvenienced, okay? That's bullshit, okay? Alcoholics should not have to be inconvenienced, okay? And I had a hard time with that, okay? And so, you know, he would make me do things so that I would be inconvenienced, okay? You know, and to this day, I think that the only two times that I don't feel inconvenienced or I can do things for fun and for free is with little children and newcomers. One of the greatest things that he told me was, he says, you know, you are such a fuck up that you will never disappoint me, okay? But see, nobody had ever told me that, okay? And for the last 28 years, I know that there is somebody that I don't disappoint, okay? Now, I don't know about you people, okay, but I don't like to disappoint people, all right? Because they give you that look like, how dare you? How could you do that shit to me, okay? And that had been a real strengthening part of my makeup, because I know that when the chips are down, there's one person that I can count on. See, and I could never do that with anybody. Anyway, you know, I went around in sobriety, and I met somebody, and we got married, and we had, you know, a big wedding in AA. We must have fought in every goddamn restaurant in Fresno, okay? I'll tell you a little story, because I think it's comical. You know, there's a big intersection in Fresno, and we're fighting, and we get to the intersection, and there's a protest going on in there, and she just gets out of the car and slams the car and says, "Fuck you," and everybody starts applauding, okay? You know, I mean, the insecure, inept guy, you know, I turned around and I'm begging her to get back in the car. So there goes the self-esteem. Oh, please, I'll never do it again and whatever, okay? And but here's what happened. This person has been a very important part of my life for two things. She's just a beautiful person, not only outside but inside. I feel like the beauty and the geek, okay, you know, for the last 23 years, okay. And the only thing that I asked her was not to mistreat my children and not to be unfaithful to me, because I had never experienced that in my life. See, there were two things I never experienced in my life: unfaithfulness and divorce. I was the first person in my family that got divorced. And so we set up house, and then she wanted to get married. You know how girls lie to you? Oh, it's okay. You know, I don't want a relationship. You just want to be friends. And then, you know, well, okay, just want to hang out with you, but I really don't want anything serious. And so one morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, she wakes me up, and she says, "You know, I want to get married." I said, "Now?" And anyway, we work it out, and we got married, and a guy only fights the fights you're going to win. I learned that in AA, okay? If you're a guy, okay, this is advice from my elders, okay, only fight the fights you're going to win. And you know when you're going to win, okay. So anyway, we've been married for a long time, and we got four boys and a girl, and we have 14 grandkids. Five of them live in Germany. I think God has a great sense of humor, you know. Three of the German grandkids are blonde, blue-eyed. The other two look like their grandfather, okay? I feel sorry for them, okay? So my life in AA has been a real journey. And in the process, I have learned how to give of myself. I have learned how to accept myself. I have learned how to try not to impress people, to act like a grown-up rather than trying to pretend to be one, okay? I have gone through the rest of the steps. I have formed a relationship with a power greater than myself, whom I choose to call God. I love Alcoholic Anonymous. I love drunks. I've never lacked for anything else since I sobered up, except for those 4.5 years, okay? Seemed like whatever God decided, it was meant to be. And I'm content to just be a sober member of Alcoholic Anonymous. I'm content to be one drunk talking to another. And I know I'm going to close a little early because I may have to go to the bathroom, okay? So in closing, this rabbi was asked what a blessing is. And he says that as we go through life, as we trudge the road of happy destiny, anything that pushes you, anything that pulls you and janks you, anything that gets inside of you and wants to make you explode, that is a blessing. And that a blessing will open doors that you were not aware could be open. And that a blessing is long gone before you realize it's a blessing. And today, I believe that my alcoholism is the greatest blessing that ever happened to me, because I used to be bitter, I used to be angry, and I used to feel inept, and today I'm better. Thank you.